The Sober Sojourn's 12 Steps and Passport Stamps podcast features recovered men and women who are practicing members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We do not claim to represent Alcoholics Anonymous or any 12-step program. We are friends gathered to discuss our experience in recovery. The discussions in this podcast represent our own individual experiences and opinions as of today. You can reach us at our email address, which is sobersojournspodcast@gmail.com, or on Instagram at oyveaa and such a Sally. We would love to hear from you. Our aim is to try to be helpful by sharing the realities of our recovery, how we have recovered and are trudging the road of happy destiny wherever we go.
Pirate Mike and Oy Vey AA presents the Sober Sojourns 12 Steps and Passport Stamps podcast.
Welcome back to Sober Sojourns, 12 step and steps, and that's it, I fucked it up. Hi. I'm Oy Vey.
And I'm Pirate Mike. It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you too. It's been like, I feel like a week since that's not true because we see each other on other Zoom endeavors. But on this particular one, yes. We have not seen each other, so it's very good to see you.
Yes. And that's, without giving too much away, that's a thing. You mentioned Tel Aviv startups once, and now we do have multiple endeavors going on. So the general public will never be tired of us.
We're going to drop merch soon, which I think, what did you say the merch was going to be? It made me laugh at the time.
Oh, barf bags, air sickness bags with our logo on it, which is really mostly to help you. Because that's something that you experience, and then we get branding every time you actually have to comfort yourself.
Oh man, I feel like I gave the impression that I just like a barf machine on airplanes. That's not. I get nauseous. I don't know if I barf.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was just important for me to make the distinction that nobody cared about.
You had this moment. I saw the pause, and you're like, "Oh, I should clarify that I don't actually vomit."
No, I don't remember. I think the last time I vomited was like in a car somewhere in like the Costa Rica roads, but that's not what we're here to talk about today.
No,
So
it's not.
after I did more about Rome, we have decided to today talk about an equally romantic city. City of Lights.
The City of
Right?
Lights.
Right, Pirate Mike?
Not Paris.
Nope, close second.
We are doing more about Manila.
Oh my god. Oy vey. Yeah.
We're doing more about Manila and my skewed experience in this little in this small city that I call home. Yeah, I'm getting like weird Hobbit vibes, like there and back again. Because the relationship that I have with this city is very different today than it was before. So Manila, I remember, I guess for perspective, right? I remember that when I was in Boston for college, one of the things that I had to deal with a lot were like misconceptions about the country and city where I was from, which was great. Like there are a couple of good stories. I remember being in a group with other international kids, and I think I mentioned this before, like the Turkish kids and there was like this one Saudi guy who was like, "Oh, so you're from the Philippines?" And I'm like, "Yes." And he was like, "That's cool, we have maids who are from the Philippines." And then I said, "That's cool, so do I." And that's like a weird, so because I guess there's a lot of call it like the domestic workforce that goes to different parts of the world from the Philippines. That tends to be like the stuff that people expect me to talk about. Like I did get questions about, oh, did you live on a hut or like some small village? And I'm sure you can attest to having some similar things. And it's not, it's a city, right? Like it's like you had to dispel some myths about Costa Rica, and Manila's kind of the same way. There's like a proper city and like a central business district. I think that one thing that gets jarring for people is the fact that you have so many things that are in your face at the same time. What does that mean? When you're driving through it, you'll see buildings that people clearly cared about to make them look like modern and luxurious and to increase tourism. And then you turn to your side and there's just like examples of abject poverty that are just spread around the city, across the street. So that's kind of my relationship with it. And I think that even when you and I have talked about certain things, that also informs my attitude sometimes towards like things that are happening in the world. Because you do have to, I mean, I think I did get desensitized a little bit just living here. That just got dark real quick.
It did get quite dark, but I understand what you're saying. The experience that I get is that people have preconceived notions about where you're from, and they expect you to kind of meet those I don't know, expectations is not the right word, or like stereotypes. Or like not even just Costa Rica. I feel like people, like for me in Israel, they're like, oh, do you have like Wi-Fi? And I'm like, I do you know that like Tel Aviv is like San Francisco, right? Like, do you get that? But still, if it's still that. Do you get some of that? The people expect you to be like some sort of something from the country at all?
It's a little, we'll say like, because I have so much to say about it, and I think that's going to be a different episode, but because it's very first world centric, right? And I get it because I am like in that moment when I'm having that experience, I've moved to like a first world country, right? From what's considered like a third world or developing country. And so people with a first world life and having first world problems, they just figure that it's going to be a certain way in other parts of the world that aren't as developed, so to speak. So yeah, there was a lot of that. I think I was aware of it pretty early on, though. So it's strange. Like I remember, okay, so McDonald's is going to keep coming up in this podcast, right? So at one point
Yes, of course.
we're going to have to pay them. I remember being like 8 or 9 years old, and I don't know at that point whether there was a McDonald's in the Philippines. I'm not going to say, but there was the first commercial that I saw on TV, and they were promoting these milkshakes, and one of the flavors was like a blueberry shake, right? And I remember it today still, because it seemed like such a dream to me. Here's this blue shake, and like, we don't have blueberries just abundantly available here. I think we do now in like northern provinces, but anyway, I was like, a blueberry shake, how exotic. I want to have a blueberry shake. And my dad was like, you don't need a blueberry shake. We don't need to spend money on that. You may not even like blueberries. And so like that was disappointment. But again, looking at the media that I was consuming always made it seem like a place to get to. And I did feel as if because I was surrounded by so much of it that I could relate. And then I couldn't really when I got to the place, I still had to deal with that. So in growing up in Manila, there was a lot of like, my school was very Americanized, and the life that I lived was also like at least in my head. And so there was like a lot of trying to make it like that in real life, So even later on when I started drinking, a lot of the stories that I have are, it seemed like you could have like taken, we're like 14, 15-year-old kids, but then we're running around with shenanigans and wrecking our lives the way that we saw like people in our 20s on TV, So like my first bar experience, like proper bar experience, I'm like 14, 15, like somehow get in, and it's already filled with like 14, 15-year-olds who I guess can be there. I'm not gonna ignore the privilege in that. And then like going to bars and clubs at that age and like kind of like living it up. And so whenever we saw movies of like teenagers or not even teenagers, but like yuppies back then, who were getting drunk and going to work. We weren't going to work because we were going to school, but like we were still going to clubs all the time and getting wasted. And
Yeah.
it was the perfect place for, my developing alcoholism.
Ooh, I mean, very interesting. As you're describing it, so I was really excited about this episode because I feel like I know nothing about Philippines. I've learned more since getting to know you, and I have been sending you some of the things that I've learned. I'm like, is this a real thing? But as you're describing it, I'm like, I'm touched by it because it's a human experience first and foremost, and it's not based on geographics. As you're saying these things, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember being a teenager in Tel Aviv and being like, this is a Sodom and Gomorrah city, and it's certainly not helping where I'm at in my life, So like that, to that at least I can relate, and I'd love to hear more, I guess, about. Yeah, just about your experience kind of, drinking and using there. And then, the big thing that is really interesting to me is the there and back again that you mentioned, because you had a full kind of hero's journey back to Manila, right?
It's so funny that you said that because it, like in my self-centered dreams, like as an 18-year-old, that was exactly the way that I pictured it. Like, oh, it's gonna be like full of resentment, right? This is gonna be like this hero's journey, and I'm gonna come back like this, whatever. I think like one of my favorite books at the time was 100 Years of Solitude, and they have that like that one of the sons there, I think Jose or I'm gonna miss the name. One of them went out, had adventures, and came back this like mysterious tattooed man, right? And then came back home. And I thought that I wanted to have that kind of hero's journey, like become somebody else than I was when I left. I didn't appreciate Manila or the Philippines very much when I was, we're talking about like the early parts of it. So in terms of being able to promote that, and there's so many beautiful things in Manila and the Philippines, but I can say that if we're talking about my story, I didn't appreciate a lot of it because I wanted more of the first world experience. And so drinking and using, there was that. I went to school with kids who were privileged and they partied like they were, and I wanted to be able to party with them. So I think it was like, so for me, right? Like we were in eighth grade, so we're like 13 years old, and I went to school with a kid who at that age, like he got his first like credit card. And then like the following year, when everybody turned 14 and they were able to get their driver's licenses illegally, like a bunch of them got cars from their parents, and so we were off and running. And
Oh
that
man.
started off like 4 years of just wreckage in high school,
Okay, so do you feel like, I don't know how to ask this without like causing a ruckus. Do you feel like, just based on the experience you're telling me, and I feel like we kind of covered this, do you feel like Philippines is a worse place to be an addict or an alcoholic?
Let's say compared to the US when I was there.
Compared to Boston, because I think you did mention something about a bottom in the last episodes, and I understood that, but I'd love to hear a little more about that. I mean, we can talk about your high school experience forever and ever, and based on that 100 years of solitude thing, I can certainly understand what kind of teenager you were. Also,
Stop it.
a disclaimer, Pirate Mike does have cool tattoos, so he completed his hero's journey
I
and
completed
is
my hero's
now,
journey.
I guess, the owner of Excalibur. Is that the name of the store? But yeah, let's talk about drug use,
I think it, yeah. I mean, okay, for me, based on my experience, it was a worse place, because of the accessibility of drugs and alcohol. Yeah, because there really was no like when I graduated high school, It was a private school, right? And it was gated. And I remember that one of the last images that I saw was like a group of fifth graders who were standing right outside of the gate smoking cigarettes, like after school. So that's what I mean in terms of accessibility. So that potentially makes it worse. And then, culturally, like even now, there's still so much that needs to be done to raise awareness in terms of like what the addiction experience really is, what recovery really is. There's still a lot of like bias and prejudice against that. And it's so like, yeah, the hole goes so deep here. I don't have any other way to describe it. It gets really, really dark.
I mean, I was gonna make a silly joke about you mentioned there's no awareness, and then you took it to the dark place. I'm like, I don't know if I can make the joke, but I'll try. Because like you said, there's no awareness about, drugs and alcohol abuse and alcoholism. And I was gonna say something along the lines of like, oh, not like in the States where like every second person has been to an AA meeting because that's where everyone goes to have a good time. Oh
Those
man.
are better words, actually. So I think, look, so in terms of awareness, like people are definitely aware, but then awareness of it's kinder eyes, right? So
Yeah, kind of thing.
like in LA, I remember seeing commercials for places like, why am I worried about copyright now? So like Passages in Malibu, right? If you're like, this is a place that you can go. So these almost like spa type experiences for people who need to recover. And we've talked about this, versus a few, like in 2018 when I came in, it was like, I'm hearing on the news where the head of the police is telling people, yeah, if you've got a drug pusher or drug addict in your city and you want to go ahead and take the law into your own hands, we support you, like that kind of shit. So
Very different
very,
cultures.
very different cultures, very different attitudes about it. And so still a long way to go before I think we're treated with the same we are treated with the same kind of respect that I see in other
No, I get it.
places.
Interesting. I get it. And it again obviously makes me wonder about if that kind of seeps in, and we have had conversations about it, so I know the answer is yes, but how would that seep into the recovery culture, sobriety culture, fellowship culture, right? Because it's different things, and you mentioned in one of the episodes, or like one of the conversations we've had, because I can't differentiate which one is which at this point of our friendship, of like how there is this culture thing of like, oh, maybe, and I'm paraphrasing here, like, maybe I won't share this meeting, or like, are there cops listening in on this thing, and all that, and again, I think you have the very unique experience of experiencing, yourself in two different points of your life, and like, I don't know how to explain, like two different places, two different, like, the both the sobriety and the using. So I just find it really interesting, fascinating, I guess.
I mean, when I was drinking and when I was actively drinking, I mean, chasing status was like a big part of it. Like what could you do? That movie Less Than Zero, like from the 80s, that was kind of my template, right? So it's the downward spiral of like a few kids living in Beverly Hills. And I thought that like that's and there were a bunch of us who were trying to feel as if we were living that way. That was the vibe, So, like, I remember things, right? Like, there was a lot of insecurity, right, on my part because just because I ran with those kids doesn't mean that I was one of those kids. So there was that, like, I'll stop playing the violin in a second, but there was that imposter syndrome. But in the times when I felt like I was part of the vibe and I felt like I could claim it, then it's like 250% arrogance. Right. So I remember, and this was before I got sober, but like I'd already been in the States for a while and working. I hadn't been home for a bit, but my sister was getting married. And so I flew out for the first time in years. And There was the wedding, and then there was the reception, and then there was very it very quickly devolved into like binge drinking and cocaine use on my part. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, we're in a different part of the city, and I'm still wearing like the traditional, like we have our own, it's not a suit and tie, but like we have our own like national costume. And
Ooh, love it. Sorry.
I was sitting at a bar on like a
Yeah.
random Saturday night with some people, and they're like, "You look weird." And
Yeah.
I'm like, "Who's gonna fucking say anything? Fucking do it." And then like just that kind of like you walk in and you're like king of the world kind of bullshit. Like that's how I remember my attitude was when it was at its most unhealthy.
Interesting. It's like the wannabe, I want to be this bad influence. Or whatever, this thing. You know what I mean? Also, more about Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in Less Than Zero, if we can just it's so good. It's so good.
It's
So
so good.
you want to be Robert Downey Jr. I get
And I
it.
did. I want to be Robert Downey Jr. Except, like, I completely ignore all the bad things, right?
Yeah, like the jail time or
Yeah,
like
like,
the
exactly. But I have, like, glitter eyes over it.
he
Even the
literally
jail
OD'd
time.
at the end.
Yeah. Like, the, what was the
Oh
one story?
man.
Like, oh, he was,
Oh.
like, somebody found him, like, laying on their couch. And he, like, he was in a different person's couch and they found him there. Like, so cool.
I mean,
So
speaking of a hero's
stupid.
journey, right? No, but I mean, yes and no. Like, I get what you're saying, the glorification of drug and alcohol abuse, and it makes you cool, and even the glorification of that emotional state, but speaking of a hero's journey with that guy, I mean, yeah. I mean, you are kind of Robert Downey Jr.
Stop.
in a way.
I'm thinking, I was actually thinking as we're going on, I'm like, fuck, am I telling Bill's story? I am. I felt like Napoleon, babe. No Saint Helena for
Bet.
me.
Fuck. I mean, Bill story. I mean, Bill was born in the Philippines, little known fact.
Little known fact.
Oh man, no, I get it. Super, super interesting to me though, and I feel like such a huge part of your story is the US, time and experience, and the fact you got sober there. But I will try and focus it kind of like with Manila. So yeah, I'm just wondering what's fellowship there like? Because you did mention the outside thing, of people bringing the recovery of like white people have bestowed upon us or whatever kind of bullshit, I'd love to hear more about that.
So fast forward, right, to like the hero returns part of it, and it's a very different experience. I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but from
Yeah.
what I've experienced so far is that AA and recovery, in particular the fellowship of AA, it seems to be viewed by a surprising number of people to me as something of privilege.
Like getting the recovery is a privilege in what way?
Yeah, because a lot of people who, since a lot of people here who attend AA, and it's a relatively small fellowship with crossover from other fellowships, with crossover from NA, we've already like mentioned that on this podcast, so I don't need to fucking hide it. Like the ones who are like AAAA, or they'll
Yeah.
be like, here's one thing that I love that I got. Like, oh, are you a pure alcoholic? I'm like, I guess I am, because I only attend these meetings. And it's usually
What do
expats.
you mean pure alcoholic?
Oh
I don't
yeah, so
understand.
we got sidetracked on that because so many people that I've met
Sorry. Yeah.
here got rehab for like heavy meth use or
Oh,
something else.
okay.
And so it's always the and. It's addict alcoholic, alcoholic addict, addict
Yeah,
gambler,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
gambler. It's everything. They made the distinction. You're like, oh, you're different because you're a pure alcoholic. And
Interesting.
I mean, I think, since I've had the conversations, I guess I get what they mean, right? Have I used drugs? Yes, and it feels weird to have to defend that. But I never felt as if I lost control over my drug use the same way that I did the
Yeah.
alcoholism.
Yeah.
Like, at one point I'll get bummed, and the plate of cocaine can skip me this time. I'll just go drink.
I don't know if this makes me laugh so
Which
much.
part?
Like, I don't know, just you giving the cold shoulder to a plate of cocaine.
Oh, that's so fucking. Yeah.
I mean, listen, I have a whole theory about cokeheads.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna alienate so much of my friends here.
I don't even like talking about this. It's so uncomfortable.
I just feel like if you did coke, like if you were like properly in rehab for cocaine and you're that kind of person, you are also gonna be insufferable in recovery. Change my mind. It's such an insufferable drug. Let me talk at you for 10 minutes.
Let me talk at you for 10 minutes. I think I know. I think I know
Sorry.
what you mean.
I'm getting
Whoa.
derailed, but it's very interesting, like distinction, right? The NA and the AA thing. And I think I can kind of relate to it because we have NA as like the big thing in Israel, and the
Yeah.
AA people are like the fancy attorneys that have their shit together.
There you go. Something
Okay,
like that.
yeah.
Something
What
like
is this
that.
mentality? It's bullshit. Excuse my French.
It has to do, I mean, here, like, no, I mean, here, the class divide is the class divide, right? And that's a big part of
Is that what it is,
Alceda.
you think?
It's a big part. Yeah, no, it is. Like, I
Okay.
remember, okay, so when I was going to school, right, sometimes it's like, oh, it'd be nice to have a little extra money if I could work a job. And when you're in the United States, it's like, okay, so I go to school with people who are also servers and waiters, and that's how you're just earning a living, right? And if I told my parents that I was going to go become a server or a waiter, to do that kind of work in college, then they'd be like, okay, we get it. If I had told them I wanted to be a server or a waiter here, and I have, the reaction was very different and very negative. Like, I think I had the idea, me with my like little American brain in high school, like maybe, I said, maybe I could get a job at the McDonald's or something. There it is again. I told my dad, like, maybe I could get a job at the McDonald's and then I
Yeah.
could earn a little money. I don't have to trouble you about an allowance. And the response was basically like, why would you think you'd have to do something like work at a McDonald's? No, I'll just give you an allowance. Like, you don't have to. The implication was like, why do you have to stoop that low?
So do you find interesting? So from what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, first of all, it's very interesting. Because I understand a little bit of it, and also I don't, and I always try to find where I am at in the experience. It's just part of the way I guess, I don't know. But do you find, and from what I'm hearing, it kind of seeps into the recovery culture because it's the culture, right? Like
I
we
think
have
it
the same
did.
thing in Israel that the culture obviously seeps into an A, and then it becomes the program in a way maybe that it shouldn't.
Yeah,
I guess that's my real question.
and I think it's changing now. So I want to like throw that out there. So one of the things I love about the experience that I'm having now, over the last like just few years, it seems like it's opening up and it is becoming as open-armed as I always hoped it would be.
Yeah.
But before, I definitely felt that way. It was kind of like it felt as if the NA fellowship, in addition to being larger, was also more for the people than AA seemed to be regarded, because you had people who were
Yeah,
coming in
yeah,
from
yeah.
like the the National General Hospital, or like the socialized hospitals and stuff, or like the
Yeah.
city jails, right? And they were being introduced to NA and recovery that way. Where AA,
Yeah.
you'd come in and you'd hear a lot of like the attorneys or the expats or like the, I bottomed out and so I did like 3 months in this rehab in Thailand, and something like that, where they have like really luxurious rehabs. And the English is a barrier. For many
Yeah.
Filipinos, the English is a barrier. And by just speaking English, then they feel like that's automatically a class divide.
Yeah, and it
And then
is.
the experiences, like the privileged experiences that you hear in AA more than you do in NA. Although there's a lot of crossover. So you also have a lot of people with immense privilege who are in NA. It's more of a mix, I think.
Yeah.
It has been.
Yeah. And you find that now it's changing kind of around you, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People who I've met in the fellowship who they can just talk to people, you know, there's less pretense, right? So maybe they do have backgrounds of privilege, but at the same time they're also like more down to earth. I'm trying to like avoid saying that, but that's really what it is. And so what you have are what I've met are more people who can bridge that divide. And they're starting up like meetings who are in the native language, right, to try to help bring that experience to people who identify as alcoholics and not, you know, narcotics users.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're, I mean, for me, right, they're very different. Like when I moved back, there wasn't a lot of, it was difficult for me to get to know people in AA because it was such a small fellowship in the meetings that I was attending. And I'm not the kind of person to just come up and start conversations. Like, I don't think I'm that friendly. I don't. So, you know, in order to try to get over my loneliness, I started
Listen.
meeting people who attended NA and I started going to more NA meetings. And there was a lot of like, well, you know, Mike, a drug is a drug is a drug. And addiction is addiction. And I was like, okay, cool. But it didn't take very long for me to like, I had to get honest with myself that I just wasn't relating or identifying with these people at a certain level. And it's not just
Yeah.
because I'm seeing the differences and not the similarities. Like, it's not just that. There's something else that wasn't, there's just something else that wasn't hitting. And it was actually making me more miserable. And so eventually I met like our
Yeah.
mutual friends, right? Things started changing.
I mean, they're a great group of people, you know. But I mean, I wonder if it's like, okay, disclaimer, I'm gonna say a triggering thing. I wonder if it's because NA is actually like sucks ass.
I'm trying not to say that, but I
Okay, you know
it kind
exactly.
of sucked ass for me, you know, because in a group, in a random group of like 10, they all knew
Yeah.
each other from the same rehab. They all had the same dealers. They all had the same experiences, right? And like, and that's the meeting. So I've been to meetings where, yeah, like 10, 15 people, they all went through the same rehabs. They all know the same dealer who's still actively using, or the same person who was, you know, in their core group or where the fucking verbiage is and is out. And then they talk about that, they talk
Yeah.
about the people, and they talk about, you know, well, we're just staying clean and serene a day at a time together.
Yeah, again, I do want to backtrack on that and kind of,
I
you
just
know.
went too far.
No,
Shit.
it's not that you went too far. I feel like I went too far because I did it for comedic purposes, but which is, you know, that's fine. I just feel like NA in general is a little distorted in a lot of ways. And I don't really find a lot of solution to talk in NA.
That's key.
That's been my main issue with that, as someone who came from NA, very much from that culture, into AA, and I was like, oh, actually, maybe I belong with the fancy crowd or whatever. It wasn't actually my thought. But I'm like, oh, have I actually been relating to these people all the time, or have I been faking it so I can be a part of this culture that has nothing to do with me in reality, except for maybe some of the drugs we did. But it's very interesting, and it's very good to hear like that there is more change, and it more fits together, because I don't like the distinctions, and I think it's important to bring AA into places where it doesn't exist. Or is not that big. I think a lot of it has to do with language, which I hope we will talk about in future episodes, kind of, you know, translation of the AA text and the harms in that or the goods in that. But that's super interesting. Yeah. I kind of want to hear more about, just a little bit more about your experiences in AA there, but I do have some like fun questions I want to ask you about Manila, you know?
Go for it.
No, but I do want to know. But wait, is there anything more that you want to like talk about in terms of like, or that you want to expand on?
I think the solution part of it, you hit it on the head. I've met more people who are more solution focused than I met before. And so it might have just been the
Yeah.
crowd that I was introduced to, which was very fellowship based, but also they took that. So if NA is more fellowship and social, right? They took that emphasis and brought it into the AA meetings that I was attending. And so there wasn't really, like, we'd throw out a daily
Oh.
reflections and then talk about it, but then no one was actively promoting the spiritual solution, right? In fact, it was in one of those meetings early on where I met people who had substantial amounts of time, let's say that, like, double digits is not a common thing here relative to the recovery
Yeah.
population. And they were like, yeah, but I'm not a step sponsor. And it was the first time I
What?
ever, thank you. So that was the first time I ever was introduced to that concept.
I'm not a step sponsor, then what kind of sponsor the fuck are you? Sorry.
Now we're gonna share one of many resentments. Yes. No, so I
This
didn't.
inspired Mike's resentment episode, low key.
I mean, I'm friends with them until they hear this episode, but
Oh, fine.
I didn't understand that, right? And I guess that's the thing. It's like now today I can respect that, like, okay, since AA does leave room for other experiences. You can find God, you can find recovery through another experience, right? That's fine. That's your business, it's not mine. So if somebody is able to find their spiritual peace and recover, not taking someone through the steps, that's cool. I just don't know why we're sharing space right now in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I mean, yeah. I mean, some would say there's a friend that we both have, and he says, "You don't have it until you gave it away." You know? And I'm like, I mean, that's kind of true.
It is
Low
kind of true.
key, co-sponsored
It is
or at
kind of
least
true.
I don't know. You know what? Fuck it. You know
It's
what? What
social.
the
It's
fuck do I know?
social.
Be helpful in otherwise.
The way they do it
Maybe he's a
is
great whatever. Husband, father, sorry. Continue.
Yeah, maybe. No, the way I see it is like there it's social. So they'll it's social. So they won't do step work the way that maybe you and I think about it, right? But they will, like, tip of the hat, these are the principles we're supposed to follow. Don't be an asshole. Don't drink and use. And then let's just keep attending meetings. Let's just keep attending conventions. Let's just keep attending unity days and, the things that they do that bring the fellowship together and be okay that way. That is the approach as far as I can see.
I love it. I feel like it's turning into a joint resentment episode now. No, and also don't be an asshole. I've met so many recovered people who are assholes. Like everyone's an asshole.
It's in the
You
share,
know what I mean?
right?
You don't
So,
have to.
yeah.
By the way, if you're recovered and an asshole, what are we doing here? I mean, come on. I'm sorry. I'm like, I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And yeah, actually, fuck you and all of my personal relationships. I'm like, what are we doing? I actually had this conversation today. But yeah, I love that this has turned into an NA discussion, but I found it fascinating because I think, stop laughing, I'm being serious.
Oh, you are okay. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, I really am because I think it's, I sometimes wonder. Why in the Middle East NA is so big, and I think it's because it's what was kind of brought there. But then I'm thinking maybe the culture is more centered around drugs than it is centered around drinking or something like that. I'm like, but I don't know if
Is it
that's true.
glorified? Is it glor You mentioned glorification. So is a drug culture glorified in a different way than the drinking culture? Because I think it is for us.
Okay. I don't know about my side of the world. I don't know if I can answer that, but I think that might be a part of it. So is there like an NA meeting finder app in Manila, in the Metro Manila area that you could find?
I mean, I don't think they need a nap. They all fucking know each other anyway. So it's just like,
Oh,
where are we
there we
going on
go.
Wednesday?
Fuck this,
They're
dude.
so organized,
Yeah.
though. I mean, I will say one thing that's that I envy is how organized NA is relative to AA. So whatever my feeling is about social sobriety, I will say that they have no shortage of organization and people, structure. Like they have regions, they have all that. Like we don't have a GSO. Not saying that we need one, but I think there is something to be said about like it would be nice if it would be nice if there was a
Sorry.
little bit more structure.
I mean, yeah, less time to spend with the wife, the better, I guess, is their mindset.
Well, more like the
Dude, there's no way I can not shit talk this.
I
I find it
know.
utterly ridiculous. I'm like, just what are we doing? I don't know. But it's a bubble and it's a safe bubble. You know, and it's an illusion of safety. And I know that bubble because I kind of,
Oh, that
went
bubble.
out of it. Yeah. Super interesting. Can I ask you some like more touristy, like food related questions that I've been itching to get to after the whole AANA pirate
Please.
rogue teenage pirate Mike in the streets
Please.
of Manila?
I think that would be a welcome departure.
Okay, and whatever we're doing that right now is great because we do plan to have people on this show at some point, and I feel like maybe I can test some like, let's see what questions I ask. Maybe we'll write it down. So is there, now I'm blanking on what I want to ask.
I know food is your number one.
Yeah, no, let me ask you this. If you were to take a person through a culinary experience of Manila, what would that day look like? You don't have to name places because we don't want the countless fans that are listening to this to try and track you down in Manila.
Nice.
But yeah, I'd love to hear about that. What would be your culinary day in Manila?
A culinary day. So me personally, right? Like I would like to go to places where there'd be native cuisine for sure, right? The Spanish and the Malay influences are there, but I would be more interested in going to places where you'd get some of that presentation. So meaning, instead of like the Western setup, you have the woven plates with the banana leaves and the foods presented there, right? Or there are some restaurants where they still they'll wrap stuff in pandan leaves and then you have to like eat with your hands or something like that. Like that kind of experience more. There's also like a pretty awesome street food culture.
Yeah, my bad.
We'll try not to get like stomach upset doing that, but I think there's some places where you can go to still have experience it with some authenticity without, risking your life. But yeah, I mean, there's so much because there's like this one, like we have our own version of what comes to mind. We have our own version of adobo, which I think I also came across right when I was in LA. I think Latino culture also has their own version of adobo. But even in the Philippines, I learned relatively later in life, there's actually different ways to prepare that same dish across different regions. And so that can become, right? That becomes like an adventure on its own. Like you can go through different islands and provinces. And even within the province or the island itself, you might have different variations. And that's fun. So there's, yeah. And then the fruits. I mean, the produce and the fruits here are just like we, with our friends, we've talked about like mangoes before. And I feel like sometimes I try
Mango.
to shy away from like really strong opinions, but I will say that like the fresh mangoes that I had when I was in LA, they're shit. So like if they're not, if it's like for me, if it's a mango that's not coming from like Thailand or the Philippines, and Thailand would be like a close second for me, like it's shit because it's not the proper, it's not supposed to be fucking red or sour or you know what I mean? Like it is like The mango is for me like the fruit equivalent of like manna from heaven. Like it's got to be like this is your spiritual experience coming from a fucking tree. That's what the mango is.
Dude, I love it. I love that I have finally ignited in you the self-righteous food virus that I have, I guess, because I love hearing people talk about food. No, dude, yeah, the fruits, I imagine. Even though we both are in the tropics, so we both share similar fruits, but I reckon that it will actually be very different, you know. Some of them. Okay, another thing I kind of want to ask, and I'm not really sure how to put this. What do you think, based on your experience, is the most your favorite place, I guess, in Manila, or the most beautiful place in your eyes?
Oh man, I'm still finding it. Ask me
Yeah,
again
me
next
too.
week after I go on this like beach trip because it's supposed to be like a world-renowned like surf destination. And one of our mutual friends was just there, and then even the photos, the few videos and photos that were shared, it's like it lives up to the hype.
Oh,
So
man.
it's one of those things, right? Like in the world of like where do you want to live, like what type of place you want to live, like scenarios, fantasy scenarios, it comes up with family and friends. Like, would you rather go to like the mountains, the forest, the beach? And there's opportunities for at least like the mountains and the beach, right? So some of my favorite places are spots where you can go on a morning hike, get to the peak, and there's like a sea of clouds that you get to witness the sunrise on at like 5, 6 a.m. And then there's also like sublime beach experiences as well. So a lot of it is definitely just like the abundance of nature, that we're blessed with here.
Okay, I think that brings me to the last question. And again, I'm kind of making this up on the spot. But if you could describe to someone who doesn't know anything about it, what is the culture, or maybe the right term would be the energy of the place. In you know, just a few short sentences, what would you say, kind of to let someone be more informed about it?
It's very welcoming. It's very tourist friendly, right? It's very accommodating. Culturally, I think that we're kind of geared towards that, just in the way that we treat family. So like the ideas of being family oriented, service oriented, to your family and your community, that lends itself well to the tourism culture. So I've met no shortage of people who visit and then decide that they want to retire here because they enjoy the company of the people and they enjoy how easy it is to go around. And just kind of, there's a lot of darkness that comes with the Wild West, and we talked about that as well. But there's also a lot of freedom and opportunity and potential that comes with it. And I think that I'm starting to appreciate and experience more of that just in the last few years. So a lot of the contempt of like angsty teenage pirate Mike like is kind of melted away somehow. And there's a lot of
Yeah.
beauty. There's so much beauty. Like one of the things that I've kind of shared with you, like I went on a hike this past weekend with people in the fellowship, and that's something that we want to do more often as a group. And it feels really special to be able to share that with others in recovery.
Yeah, dude, thank you so much for sharing that with me, and yeah, for just being you, and I'm convinced I'm booking my flight.
We've prepped the room. I mean, we're just waiting for your go ahead.
Nice.